I am quite confident that I am not alone when I say social media often can be freaking exhausting. The idea of keeping up with trends sounds equivalent to nails on a chalkboard to me. I want to find that beautiful flow state in the studio with no screens, no technology, and just a happy, magical zen space. The last thing I want to do is worry about doing some ridiculous dance or keeping track of whatever new song is trending or creating a transition in a video. What the heck is that? However, at the same time, I know that there is a huge opportunity on social media. After all, Instagram alone has 2 billion, with a B, 2 billion users. So it would be a little bit foolish of me to completely ignore it. But how the heck do we do this? Well, my friends, enter Ally Mason, a data-based marketing strategist who understands that us solopreneurs and small independent businesses don't necessarily have the time or the desire to be spending all of our time keeping up with the ever-changing world of social media. And even Ally's own account, at that Ally Mason, shows that she practices what she preaches. After all, my story with Ally is a perfect example of what I think we all want for our businesses from social media. Because a couple of years ago, I was introduced to Ally by Sula with Golden Ratio Clayworks, who was on this podcast. I started following her on Instagram, and by doing so, got to know her approach to what she teaches, her values, and frankly, as you'll soon find out, her humor. After a few months, I was definitely hooked and drinking the Ally Mason Kool-Aid. And about a year or so later, I hired Ally for a one-time audit and strategy session. And at the start of this year, I jumped on the opportunity to join Ally's inaugural beta group of membership students. Even though I was joining as I was practically sitting in the airport on the way to Italy and couldn't participate until just recently. But that's how excited I was about it. That's how much value she had brought to me just following her on Instagram. And now, I'm bringing her to you. And she's coming into the community to teach a one-hour masterclass. We'll get more on that in a little bit. My point in sharing this progression of how Ally and I have worked together is to get to this. Over the last 2 years, Ally has not constantly been on Instagram every single day. She doesn't post a reel or a video without ever taking a break. In fact, she's taken some really big breaks, like months. And yet, I'm still hooked. And Ally is still booked. Okay, that was bad. Let's move on. The point is, I think this progression is what we all dream of. Using social media for what it can do for us all to grow our businesses, but not have it be our businesses. We want to be able to take a month or two away when we need to, or heck, when we want to. But we also want to be sure that we're doing what we can to sell more pots and pursue our dreams, right? Can that magical balance possibly exist? Well, I'll let you answer that question for yourself as I chat with Ally Mason in this episode. But one more quick thing. Just remember, this conversation is frankly only the tip of the iceberg. Ally and I fielded as many questions that you all submitted ahead of time as we could during this 1 hour. But I'm sure hearing her answers bring up more questions. And that is exactly why 2 weeks from now, on April 25th, Ally is coming into our community for a super special, unique masterclass. My friends, this masterclass is about her answering members' questions directly. It's not a pre-made slide deck. It's going to be awesome. And I could keep rambling on about this opportunity right now, but I'll leave that for the end. So if you're interested in learning more after you hear all of Allie's advice in this episode today, stick around in your headphones all the way until the end, and I'll explain what's happening inside of the community on April 25th. But for now, let's dig into this first Q&A with Allie Mason, right after a brief word from our sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by the Rosenfield Collection of Functional Ceramic Art. The collection exists as an online source for research and inspiration, featuring photos of objects made by over 1,000 artists. The images are high quality and can be used with no permission required, making them a great source for students and teachers. To find out more, visit www.rosenfieldcollection.com. A special thank you to the Archie Bray Foundation for sponsoring this episode of the Maker's Playbook. The Bray Clay business is your best source for Bray Epoxy, a two-part moldable epoxy intended for post-firing repairs. Working like clay, it's easy to shape, texture, fill gaps, and recreate missing parts. Bray Epoxy is sold in tan, white, and black base colors, with a 9-color kit that will allow you to perfectly disguise your repair. Order anytime online at archiebrayclay.com. Now, on with the show. Welcome to the Maker's Playbook, the show where we talk all about what it's really like to make a living from the things you make. I'm your host, seasoned entrepreneur of 14 years, Rebecca Ikes Cara. Oh my goodness. I have no transition and no segue but to say, hey, Allie, welcome
Hi.
To the podcast.
Thanks.
One of these days when I have more bandwidth, so, you know, in 10 years or something, I really want to, like, place little Easter eggs at the end of podcast episodes for the goofy stuff that when we're just, like, testing sound and making sure technology works that gets recorded. Mm-hmm. I just want to, like, plop those at the end.
Yeah.
Someday. Today is not that
Someday.
Day, so don't worry.
Not that day. Yes.
Anywho, for people who don't know who I'm talking to, let me back up on that. I am fairly confident that I was originally introduced to you through the beautiful Sula of Golden Ratio Clayworks. Because she has followed your savvy marketing and strategy work. Mm-hmm. And then I saw her share something. I feel like you just need to, like, learn how to make pots already, actually.
I really do. What? Honestly, it's been on my dream list, my bucket list of crafty things that I would like to try.
Well, I know some people on the West Coast, so we'll do an intro after this.
Yeah.
But before I get ahead of myself and people are like, wait, why are you talking to someone who doesn't make pots? How would you introduce yourself?
I would introduce myself as a social media strategist and social media manager who has worked with a lot of makers, creators, entrepreneurs, personal brands, and celebrities. This has been what I've been doing for over 10 years now, going on year 11. And it's what I love. One of my favorite things about working with makers is how much heart they put into the work that they do. And I think that that is where our Venn diagrams really overlap. We have a lot of different skills otherwise. But yeah, that is where we definitely have crossover.
Totally. What I noticed right away and what I love so much and has me like drinking all the Kool-Aid that you put out into the world is that you understand reality, for lack of a better way of putting, like, you're not just pumping out. There's so many things that people can follow that are like, here's this trending sound, you better make a reel with it right now. Mm-hmm. If you want to grow, here's this trend, here's this, like, that's not what you're doing.
No,
you're like, hey, what's your actual phase in business, in life? Like, what's reality for you and how can we work within that? But you might say that in a different, more eloquent way than I just put.
I think that's pretty good. Yeah, you did a great job.
Which, correct me if I'm wrong, but some of that comes from you had like a far more analytical data background before you got specific into the data of social media, right?
Yeah, I formerly was a research and statistical officer for the government of Alberta when I was living in Edmonton, where I was working in the consumer protection department. And so I did a lot of research and statistical support for essentially the decisions that were being made at a legislative level, why we're implementing certain legislation over others or the type of legislation we were writing and recommending it based on what I was seeing in the data. And that was, you know, my most recent introduction. But then before that, my actual bachelor's is in anthropology and I focus mostly on archaeology. And in that world, you also need to run stats for things like presence-absence surveys or even doing correlative data for different dig sites and things like that. So it's always been, I think, since I was probably 20 years old, a part of the work that I've done in one way, shape, or form, whether it was archaeology, working for government, when I was in journalism. Statistics have always been like a really important part of how I do what I do. And I think that is kind of like a distinction between myself and some other folks who are in my industry is because I am very data driven.
And not in a, I'm going to say this before anyone starts like their hands aren't muddy yet, their fingers hovering over the maybe I'll go to a different episode button. It's not statistics in the sense of, oh my gosh, I can't wrap my brain around this. It's more you looking at data and then giving recommendations from that. It's not. Mm-hmm. It's not coming to makers being like, well, you need these three spreadsheets if you want to grow on Instagram. That's not what we're talking about.
Yeah, no, not clarify. At all. And stats from any perspective are the most interpretable, if that is a word, type of number when it comes to doing research, right? So stats is what we get when we see there was a 75% increase in this. That's because somebody ran statistics. Right. It's like that is the most easily digestible form of data analysis. And so what I think is so important is once people get over kind of the fear of the numbers, the fear of the data, I don't even go into my insights. Ah, you know, that kind of resistance. You actually once it's like knowing how to fix a car. Once you know what's underneath the hood and you understand what hose and what fan and what belt are supposed to be doing which things, it makes it a lot easier to have your car run smoothly. And Instagram is no different. Once you are in there in the data and you start understanding, oh, okay, that means this and this means this other thing. And actually, if I see this number go up, but then this other number also goes up, then that actually is means it's the same. You know, then you start drawing all of these kinds of conclusions for yourself. And it makes it a lot easier for you to really be empowered and make decisions based on what's actually working, not what Instagram is like, hey, this post is doing better than 80% of your posts. Those seem so arbitrary to me sometimes. I'm just like, did you just like pick one out of a hat? I don't know. Like, how does this work?
100%. Because also sometimes it's like, yeah, that post is doing better because I didn't post for 2 weeks because I was sick or tired or at a conference or on vacation or intentionally took a break. So of course the first post I posted in 2 months is doing better than 80%. Like, right. People haven't seen me for ages. Like, yeah. You know.
Yeah. Context matters.
The thing that always cracks me up is like, this post is doing 75% better than your usual post. You should boost it. I'm like, but you just told me it's doing better.
Well, and so we can talk about that.
Why would I give you money?
They're not wrong. You don't post. Ooh. What I will tell you, pro tip coming in hot, never boost a post that is underperforming. If it's underperforming, trash it. And that doesn't mean delete it. It just means don't put money behind it.
Exactly. As soon as you say this out loud, my brain's like, oh, duh, which is the experience I have a lot of the times when you and I sit down and have a conversation. Just yes, period. There's no way to soften that, guys. Okay, since we're getting into the pro tips, we do have a lot of questions from our community members. People have heard me talking about this. So I'm just going to go straight there before we lose track of time, because I think there's going to be so many nuggets that come from this. Mm-hmm. So just to give a little like overarching where we're going here so everybody knows, I've broken these up a little bit into like a getting started category that I'm going to ask first. And then I think there is a very big category that's maybe not big in this number of questions, but big in the emotional weight, which is burnout on social media. And then the third category is just like quick hits to me, like practical, you know, what I imagine you're just going to be like, I forget what other show
rapid
is called.
Fire,
it's like the 30 second
hot seats,
rapid fire. There's the phrase. That's what I was trying to think of. So yeah. That's where we're going on this journey. And Antonio starts out with, I almost feel like this is a slightly impossible question, but I'm really looking forward to seeing what your answer is. He is saying,
let's say you haven't started any efforts around branding, around marketing, anything. Your goals are super broad. You're still figuring out, you know, what the heck, where you're going with this crazy life of making a living from the things we make. But you understand that a degree of recognition on the internet is helpful. Mm-hmm. Where do you start? Do you use, and the couple of examples he gives with that where do you start question is, do you start with a new page? Do you use an existing personal as like a launching point? What does a foundation look like? Which is a connecting to another question we got from Jessica, which was like, where do I begin? Where do I even start?
I mean, I think that is such a common question, right? Especially when people start building a business offline and then want to take it online. And my recommendation almost always is never to go the personal to business route. And it's for one main reason, which is, as you know, you will probably back me up on this, Rebecca. I feel like almost everyone I've ever spoken to about this shares a similar sentiment. The audience you're looking to attract is not your friends and your family. The audience you want to attract are people who are customers, who enjoy the art that you create, whatever, you know, in this case, potters. They're not, you know, your high school English teacher or the TA you worked with when you were in college. It's more important to keep your audience really honed, especially at the beginning, toward who your real, true, ideal audience is. Because the data that, again, we're going to go back to data, the data that Instagram takes to decide who to show your content to, right? Just to baseline explanation of how the algorithm works, it's if this, then that. If Allie has these types of people who follow her and they tend to like her usual content, then when she makes her account public and the next time she posts, we're going to show her content to more people who are similar to her followers. If your followers are not the type of people, and like, you know, no shade, who are going to actually engage with your business content, like truly the people in my life who are like most supportive of my business content, sure, my mom, everybody else in my family and extended friends, a lot less, right? They are happy for me. They want my business to be successful. They support me in the very friendship-oriented kind of way, but they're not on every post of mine leaving comments or liking or sharing it with the people who are in their community, right? And that's what actually matters, especially when you're just starting out and especially when you're trying to grow. So start with a fresh account. Don't muddy the water. Keep it really simple. Just post business content with a little bit of personal so people get a sense of who you are, but really get a sense of like why you're on social. What are you showing up to do, sell, be, and then go from there. Once you get 3, 6, 12 months of data, then you'll start being able to see, you know, how are these things interacting with one another? What kinds of content, what kinds of styles perform best for the people who are interested in what I do?
I just thought of a direct example of you. So you and I have never actually met in real life. Mm-hmm. But when you share the gems that you share on Instagram, I'm forever like posting those in stories, linking them in our community, talking about them with other makers, which is a direct like business audience to business audience. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, when you're talking about the ways in which our family and friends support us, that's like in real life support. Like, I don't know your favorite. Well, maybe I could think about it. I wouldn't know what to order you for lunch and surprise you with like a delivery. Mm-hmm. But your best friend presumably is going to be able to do that for you. Like, that's the kind of support that we're talking about between those audiences. That's where my brain went, at least.
Exactly.
I almost said I don't know your favorite coffee, but I think I could figure that out because that is a personal thing that you share.
That I share often on social. Yeah. Yeah. And I think one of the things I just want to note is how tempting it is, especially if you have like a few hundred followers already, to start with your personal account, right? Like, you think, oh, well, this is going to give me some authority. It's going to show that I'm already a little bit established. It's going to help me so that I don't have to start from zero. But quite frankly, often it slows you down in the long run. And that's going to be true, especially if that number is higher. So I want you to think about it this way. It's like you have scales, two scales, right? If you start with a personal account, then this side of the scale is going to start much higher than the other side, which is your business content. You need to work to essentially equalize the audience so that the same number of people who are following you for business are following you for personal, and then you need to surpass that. But if the information Instagram has right now is these are the type of people who like this person's content, then it's going to keep showing content to more people like this. Whereas if you just started here on both, maybe some of your family and friends opt in to follow you, maybe they don't, but you're going to grow much faster because it's going to be so much clearer that these are your people, not these.
So for the person, this is my own added question now. For the person who's hearing this who has already started their personal account and maybe, you know, or has already started with using their personal account and is hearing this and maybe they're 2 or 3 years in going, oh, crap, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if the recommendation from you would then be scrap it, start over, as opposed to start, pruning the, I was trying to think of like a non-aggressive.
I know, yeah.
Of like, yes. Clear them out, unfollow your friends, restart a personal account and get everybody over there, I'm assuming is your recommendation, but correct me if I'm wrong.
That is usually my recommendation, is to migrate your close family and friends to a personal account that is private and keep it private for a little while. Mainly just so that it's really clear what account is for which thing, and slowly remove them as a follower from your business page. Make sure you don't do too many removals in a short period of time, because there are action blocks on Instagram, which are essentially when you perform too many of the same tasks sequentially, very close together, and it essentially thinks that you're maybe like not human. So it flags your account as being a bot or being something else that's against Instagram's terms of service. When that happens, you get blocked from taking further actions for usually somewhere between 24 and 48 hours. If you get multiple, sometimes it can be up to a week, 2 weeks. If you keep pushing the envelope, you can have your account disabled or deactivated permanently. So you just want to be really careful. I usually don't remove any more than, say, 20 to 40 a day. And I try to do it in two little spurts. So maybe once in the morning for 10 minutes or so, I'll go through and I'll remove some people, or maybe even less than 10 minutes, like 2 or 3 minutes. And then once later on in the day.
Cool. This segues beautifully, actually, into Jenna's question, which was asking about separating out different audiences. And whether or not she should have different Instagram pages for each audience. Now, she's got a follow-up question, which I think answers the question I was going to add to this, which is if her target audience is radically different. If her target audience is not other potters, but consumers of pottery. And I just finished reading the rest of the question, so maybe it's not quite. She's asking if it's beneficial to show process videos of a product being made. If you're not trying to attract, I think this is also because pottery is such a hot subject in like the social sphere right now. Like, it's so popular.
Yeah.
I'm adding my own two cents onto Jenna's question, which is to say it's really easy to attract other potters right now. I mean, we do buy each other's pots, so that can work. But if you're not interested in teaching, or if you're not interested in that audience per se being your ideal audience, that's not necessarily helping you. So back to Jenna's original question, is talking about that decision between separating products. Where's the line in whether or not you need completely separate accounts?
Products from education, is that the question?
I think her first question is more about separate product lines, like distinctly different styles. Distinctly different audiences, like maybe direct to consumer versus wholesale.
I don't think direct to consumer versus wholesale, the account makes a difference. In fact, you know, I can think of offhand even people within my space who are working with some of the biggest brands in the world. They don't have a direct to other brands account, even though they work with like the little guys, right? Same for me. I will work with some bigger brands, but they don't become a separate audience. It's not a different skill set. It's not a different product, even if it's a different audience. Sometimes our audience is just bigger than what we think it is, right? And that might not be your number one kind of income level or revenue stream, but they're going to find you in the same way. And separating it only really matters if the messaging is so dramatically different. But to me, something like that, say you're going, you know, direct to consumer versus to commercial sales, that's simply just adding a PS. PS, we are available for commercial orders. Or you have a highlight that says commercial orders or D2C, you know, D2B. Like whatever the lingo is that actually will convey it to the person who you're trying to reach. If they know that that means them, great. If they don't, then you need to find a way to convey it better so that they do. If it's a different product line or incredibly different style, I also don't really think it makes a huge difference. I actually think that it's kind of presumptuous to think that our current audience would not also like something we made in a different style. I see, you know, I follow a lot of Potters. I am a fan of pottery. You know, I collect pottery because I often share it on my Instagram story. And I think the pottery that I've gotten from different, from often from the same potters, the same, you know, different pieces from the same potter, they look dramatically different sometimes. That doesn't mean that I don't want to see that content. And sometimes, you know, it's really cool. Like all of a sudden, I'll see something from a potter that I've never seen before. And maybe they won't even like say what it is. I remember there's this one person I follow from back in Prince Edward Island, which is close to where I'm from. It's where my best friend lives. And he posted something and I thought it was those little egg holders, you know, for like soft boiled eggs where you like chop the top off and like stick toast in. And I was like, are those egg holders? And I was ready to buy. Like, I've never seen them on his page before. I was like, I'm about to get some egg holders. And then he was like, no, I think they were like little like tasting glasses for like liqueurs or something like that, right?
And I was digestive.
Like, yeah, I was like, they should be egg holders.
You'd be like, but can I fit an egg in
it? Exactly. He did clarify. He was like, I don't think that they're the right size for eggs. I know, exactly. I was upset.
I also feel like it only works outside of the United States for them to be egg holders because only people I know with other cultural influences
really
even use them. I've never seen an American who isn't also, oh, I lived in France for 2 years, or my mom is French and my dad is American, you know, whatever. Then I see egg holders, but I'm just the number of people I feel like who are going to be like, what the hell is an egg holder?
Listen, the market is hot. It's ready. America needs egg holders.
Especially if you can also put a digestive in it at night. It's a breakfast to dinner item.
So multifunctional.
I mean, I'm thinking of a whiskey sour right now, because not that the digestive cup works for a whiskey sour, but I'm like, there's egg in that. Why not?
Yeah, why not? A little crossover.
Oh my God, I love it. I had a segue question of what you're... Oh, actually, let's just clarify, since we mentioned, if it was education and products, then would
I
you...
I might consider
like,
it.
Is that a big enough divide?
But it also depends on where your audience split is now, right? Because say, for example, like I think Jenna, one of her specific questions was sharing process videos. Mm-hmm. I think as a customer and as an appreciator of pottery, I love seeing process videos. There's nothing more satisfying than watching somebody lay into like, you know, a big wet pile of clay and like seeing what comes out.
Don't tell me you've gone. I was like, Allie, if you've gone down the shirtless pottery route, we're going to need some words off.
We're not going to talk about that. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I thought better of you, Allie.
I'm kidding. No, you should see my explore page. There's no shirtless potters on my explore page. It's mostly just dolphins and memes and baby animals and things like that. But what happens often, even if we're not necessarily sharing education, right? Like I think of a process video as being something that is educational for our customer about what goes into how we create our art, right? You don't have to give, I'm not saying like film a time lapse and post the entire thing front to back. I'm thinking about like clips. You have like a couple seconds of you like, you know, doing the thing where you're basically like massaging the clay at the beginning. You have a couple of seconds where you're cutting to different stages of the creation process. You know, the little wire that you slide underneath, you put it on the shelf, you put it in the kiln. Like, I want to see all that. I like seeing all of that. It's very cool. It's a cool process for me. I like glazing. So neat. All very interesting to me. But regardless of whether or not you post that kind of content, if you are building an audience and people perceive you to be successful, you are going to attract other people who do what you do. It's just the nature of the business. It doesn't matter if you are actually posting stuff that is meant for those people or if it's educational or not. Sometimes it's people wanting to network. Sometimes it's people being just admirers of the work that you create. Sometimes it is people looking to kind of see if they can glean part of your process from your content so that they can, you know, add it to their own. But you can't really stop that from happening. The only thing you could do is like actually remove those people when they follow you. But I don't think that it should control whether or not you share process videos, because I think of that as like being behind the scenes stuff. It's kind of like your VIP content. It's great to attract new people because that kind of stuff falls into the like satisfying video category, which is the same reason why I keep getting sucked into videos watching people clean really dirty rugs and like trimming horse hooves. I have no interest in either of those things, but they're so satisfying to watch in the same way that watching people create pottery is. There's just something so tactile and like satisfying about it. You're just like, wow, look at that transformation. There was a blob of clay and now it's a vase, you know, or a vase, as some people in America say. We say vase.
I had no idea that horse hooves were a current satisfying category.
They are. Well, livestock in general, to be honest. Sometimes it's cows. Sometimes it's cows.
That's true.
I was going to say, I know cows are like, especially Highland cows, like that's a whole thing, but I digress. Yeah. That's super helpful for me. My brain also assumes that like how what you put in the caption alongside that content informs the audience, like it informs as in guides who the audience mm-hmm. is, in the sense of like if you're putting in a caption, like the way I'm going to describe centering the clay at the beginning for you or the people that we met at the market last week is different than the way that potters talk about centering, mm-hmm. right? I'm not going to go into a 300 level collegiate course description of what the right hand is doing when you're centering, as opposed to, oh, the first step of our process of throwing is centering the clay because you need to get it, you know, whatever. Like, bare minimum education to someone who has no idea what you're doing.
Yeah. And I wouldn't even say at that level that you even need to explain what you're doing. If you're sharing a process video and it's like a front to back process, this is, you know, a teaser. These go into the kiln tomorrow. I can't wait for you to see how this glaze turns out. Or, you know, what pattern should I paint on the outside of these? You don't even talk about the technicality. It's not about that for the consumer. It's about seeing you in action, seeing you creating the thing that they are eventually going to buy and have in their home. Because at that point, it has become a relationship, right? From your hands to theirs, quite literally. That's really the way I want you to think about, why am I sharing this content? It's like, I'm not sharing it because I need my people to understand the technicalities and the steps of this process. I'm sharing it because it allows them to connect with me in a deeper way, to see me at work, to see how much energy and like love and heart I pour into this thing that I create. And then I can use it to kind of tease more from them or get more kind of consumer or customer input. You know, what glaze would you like to see next? What glaze was your favorite? Like, there are so many ways that you can, you know, people talk about calls to action all the time, right? And they think it just means click the link in my bio. It doesn't. A call to action is anything you're inspiring someone to do, and you can make it fun and you can make it personal and you can, you know, switch it up depending on the type of content that you're creating. But it's always about fortifying and building those connections and those relationships with the people who follow you and giving them the next step to actually go ahead and buy the thing that you're selling.
That last part that everybody, it's like, and tell them, like,
tell them
if it is
for sale.
Hey, you can buy it this weekend at the market. Yeah.
Yeah.
On that Well, I don't know if it's on that note. I was just going to say that as a segue phrase, let's be honest. I'm not going to attribute this to any one member of ours because I know it is a question everybody has. Mm-hmm. Do I need to show my face on a daily, a weekly, a whatever schedule basis in order to connect, in order to grow on Insta?
You know, you know me, I hear a question like this and I want to ask a question in return, which is, why don't you want to show your face on Instagram? What's preventing you from feeling good about showing up and being there? Because quite frankly, this is a way I talk about social media all the time. Social media is not different than real life. If we are craftspeople selling at a flea market, if we're selling at a brick and mortar that, you know, we're a guest artist, or if we have our own shop, right? People can come into our place of business and buy directly from us. Are you going to like go out with a paper bag on your head? Like, what's happening there that makes you feel like you don't want to show up visibly in your full personhood, where connecting with people face to face, me being able to see your eyes, me being able to see your demeanor, makes it so much easier for me to build that relationship with you. And I think there's this feeling of a lot of people wanting to hide themselves on social media because there is so much greater possibility for exposure, in air quotes. But the reality is, none of us start posting on social feeling totally confident and comfortable staring at ourselves on a screen. None of us do. I say this to clients a lot, Amen. And I mean it with the utmost Amen. Love, but not liking watching yourself on video does not make you special. It makes you so totally normal. And I, even with a background in journalism, even being very, like, I love performance. I love making people laugh. I love being with people and, you know, kind of getting attention in like certain ways. I want people to understand that even for me, who went to school for this, who can teach on stages, who has taught in front of 300 people, I still did not like watching myself on video when I first started. When I was going through my journalism program, I used to constantly volunteer to be the video editor. Why? Because I didn't like seeing myself on camera.
Yep. The number of people who say like, oh my gosh, I love the podcast. I would love to do something like that, but I hate the sound of my own voice. And I'm like, what makes you think that it's literally it's scientifically proven. Like, yep. I don't enjoy listening to my voice.
No.
I've just now done it. For 2 years.
Enough times that you've been like, fine. I always tell people, you don't have to love it ever.
Now I'm like listening to another person.
Exactly. You don't ever have to love watching yourself on video, listening to your own voice. But I really challenge the people who are resistant to showing up to at least hate it a little bit less. Just start hating it 1% less. That's all I'm asking. It's like not a big ask. And it's if you can hate it 1% less, even on a weekly basis, because you just keep showing up and doing it and you become more comfortable with it because of the exposure to it, then that is going to get you so much further than asking the question, how do I not show up, or how do I show up as little as possible? That's not the answer here, especially not on social, and especially when you're someone who is an artist. It's like, we're not in the days, sadly, anymore of like patroning the arts, right? Like, I'm not just like a royal who's going to be like, summon the potters, bring me 100 new pots in this glaze. Like, it doesn't happen anymore.
You know, but it might be a good thing, what with the whole like hierarchy of socioeconomic groups.
That part for sure. But I mean, like, what is actually happening is that like the arts are just not Yes. being funded. That's my problem, right? I think when we that would be a time when you wouldn't have to show up, because there would be people with power and money who can fund your art because they love it. And that would work. If you're not in that position, if you're just like everybody else, then yeah, you got to keep showing up. And if you're not showing up at least a couple of times a week, it's going to be really hard for people to connect with you on a personal level. Is it possible? Sure. Is it likely? Less so.
And that was the thing. That was my follow-up question, was that it's not that it's impossible. It's just harder. Mm-hmm. So
it's harder.
Would you rather... You know, because I look at there's a potter. A lot of people are going to know Joe at Old Forge almost never shows his face. Mm-hmm. However, what Joe does is put a lot of time and effort into deep quality blog posts that he mm-hmm. then takes and makes into well-designed, truncated infographics
yeah.
that take more time, in my opinion, than it takes me to open up the camera in my office by myself and for 90 seconds talk to the camera on a story.
And it doesn't even have to be 90 seconds, right?
Whatever it is. Right.
That's the beauty of it.
And it's just, and Joe's doing great. Joe's doing better than I am yeah. on social media. So no dig whatsoever. But the work, you're just trading, I guess the point I'm trying to make, and I want your opinion on, is mm-hmm. you're going to trade one thing for another.
100%.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, he also posts every single day, and I don't, because mm-hmm. I think I can connect faster twice a week with my face than five times a week without it.
Yeah. And every audience is different. It depends on what you're doing. And like, you know, honestly, your audience is probably a little bit different than his. So the way that we show up has to also interact and like talk to the way we feel authentically about how we want to show up and do business. If not showing up on camera is just coming from a place of not liking watching yourself on video, feeling uncomfortable, filming selfies, talking to a camera with nobody else there, then that's not, to me, a good enough reason to not create video content. If there is some moral or ethical or, you know, values-driven reason why video content and showing up on video is like not for you, if you're like actually, you know, for XYZ reasons, this is against my ethics as a person. Sure. Like, I will never tell someone that they should disregard their own personal values, ethics, and morals to make something happen on social media. There is always a way around it. But to your point, it will take more time and energy because creating graphics in that style to make up for the fact that you're not showing up on video in that way takes much more time. And then on top of that, what you're sharing in Instagram stories is now going to change, right? Because Instagram stories are kind of the place where people go to connect with people in their real life. It's like the relic of Snapchat, right? Like, obviously, Snapchat still exists. It's not like Snapchat has like gone out of business, but that's where stories came from ideologically, conceptually, was from Snapchat. And so that was sharing in the moment real life stuff. That's why we think about it in that specific way. So bearing all of that in mind, if you're willing to sacrifice more time, have it take a little bit longer to grow, sure. If not, get out there and just start challenging yourself to keep creating.
I would just like my two cents of the challenging yourself side of it, like finding the version of it that you can be comfortable with. Like if people really dig into the content I'm putting out there, you're almost always going to see this background because I'm almost always in my office, which is a bedroom, a spare room where I can shut the door. Mm-hmm. I'm not even doing this in front of Francesco because the idea of doing this in front of anyone else
yeah.
makes me so uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing the thing where somebody's walking down the sidewalk of New York City talking to their phone. Like, I cannot imagine what that would. It makes my skin crawl, but I can do it on a little cell phone tripod on my desk with no one around me to like pay attention to.
Yeah.
I found that space for
myself.
There
are levels. Exactly. And if filming the video at first is too uncomfortable still, take a selfie, just a picture, and then type words on top of it and start there and put that in your story because it deletes in 24 hours, you know, it archives in 24 hours, and then you don't have to look at it anymore. But just start somewhere where you're starting to challenge the belief that, you know, I really don't want to show up on social. And so as a result, I'm going to try to avoid it. Challenge yourself to actually try.
And the thing I want to add that gets us slightly off topic, but I also know you've done a lot of work in this space, is especially for people who don't look like you and I, we want to see more people who show up on the internet, right? Like, I'm just thinking about a conversation I had with Christina Batiste of Juniper Clay, who was saying, like, it wasn't till 2020 that she put her face online to show who the artist was because she realized there was power in someone understanding that as a Black woman, she made these pots and that that is important. We need more people than 90-pound blonde girls who surf to show up on the internet.
Yeah.
Sorry. That no offense to the 90-pound blonde girls. Like, no, you're great, too.
Yeah. There's a place for everyone, but there is certainly not representation happening that actually reflects the diverse makeup of a lot of the industries and the people who run them, right? And so that is the point. The point is show up as you so that other people can see, oh, this is actually who this person is. I had no idea. You know, I presented at Craftcation last week and I was talking to people about even putting your name somewhere in your profile. It's like, how are people going to DM you and know what to call you if you don't have your name somewhere in there, if you just have your business name, right? So those little personalizations that allow someone to connect with you on a deeper relational level are really important when it comes to selling on social media and not feeling super sleazy about it.
Which I think answers the next question, but I want to mention it anyways in case you have anything you want to add.
Mm-hmm.
There's two questions to me that are like the side of the same coin or the piece of the same pie, whatever phrase we want to use. Antonia was asking, how much are we really marketing ourselves versus our work? And acknowledging that there's bias, there's good and bad in that, but just wondering what that effect is. And in the same vein, Anne was asking, how do you separate the creator from the artist? In that sometimes she feels like she should be recording when she's making, but then that kind of pulls her out of that magic flow state of making and, you know, having that space for making art versus creating content. But I think that's in tandem with what this theme that we're talking about as in terms of marketing ourselves versus marketing our art.
I mean, I honestly don't really see them as incredibly different. My perspective on this is that when we share ourselves, we humanize our business. So it's not about marketing me. It's about humanizing the thing I sell. This is not just a machine popping out pots. This is not just a machine writing reports and giving strategies to people. This is a real person, a real human being behind this account who works really hard and who, you know, would like for people to buy the thing that they're selling, right? This is me doing the work that I do. Often what I end up finding is when people perceive it as marketing themselves versus marketing their business, with that comes a level of like performing oneself. And that's not the idea that I want people to get here. I want people to think of it as, when I share things about me showing up, not even necessarily me making pots, right? Anything, my favorite coffee order, me going on a nature walk, me doing something unrelated, right? Where I get inspiration from. Those things allow people to connect with us on a deeper relational level. It's not about marketing. It's not about manipulating. It's about showing up and being a real person, a real human being who runs a business. And as a result, what you share and how much of it is going to depend on you. There's a big part of this, and in the marketing space and in a lot of other spaces, ask any lawyer, what's the answer to any question? It depends. It really depends. It depends on you. It depends on the context. It depends on what you're trying to achieve and how quickly. It depends on your level of comfort. It depends on how much joy you get from the process of sharing and connecting with others, because this is one of the really interesting things. What I often find is a strong correlation. The same people who claim to hate social media are the ones doing the least connecting with others. The more you spend time connecting with people through social media, the easier it is to not hate it. Again, I'm not asking you to love it. I'm just asking you to hate it a little bit less. So if you are actually showing up and you're giving people an opportunity to connect with you, right? It can be over the most random, mundane things. And this is why, you know, it doesn't, when it comes to especially Instagram stories, things like that, adding little things that maybe don't even seem like they're related to your business or maybe to you are just part of your everyday routine gives people an opportunity to see themselves in you, to feel like there is some additional connection there. And when you have the opportunity to actually talk about it, you know, I'm always sharing videos or photos from me being on the beach, right? I moved across the country to California so that I could walk on the beach every day in Southern California. And I share that with my audience.
To be fair, you were committed to that when it was 35 degrees in New York.
I was walking.
I just want the world to know your level of commitment.
I was walking in Coney Island at 35 Fahrenheit. Yes, that is true. And I am very committed to walking on the beach, but it is nicer when it is a little bit more pleasurable in the warmer temperatures and less windy. And, you know, there's palm trees. It's just, it's nice.
There's more dolphins.
But that being said, people reach out to me almost like fairly regularly saying, oh, there's this great beach here. There's this great place there. You really need to check out, go up the coast to this place. There's this kelp forest and there's a bunch of dolphins that you can see there all the time because they're always in the kelp beds. Like people are giving me these little insider tips. How can I be mad at that? How can I hate social media when people are giving me like insider tips on where to find dolphins playing in the water? Like, I can't be mad at that. So I think that's the other part of this balance. I always like to think a good place to start with anything in terms of a ratio is 80-20, right? The 80-20 rule applies to so many things in life. Talk about your business 80% of the time. Talk about yourself 20% of the time. I think that can invert. In Instagram stories, you can talk about yourself 80% of the time, talk about your business 20% of the time, but it doesn't have to, right? That's what I like to do. So that's what I do. But these things are all malleable. There is literally no copy and paste social media strategy that's going to apply the same way to every single person. And if somebody is telling you that it does, that it's going to work guaranteed for every single person, chances are you're getting swindled. So take a step back, take a pause, ask for some testimonials, see what the results actually are. And chances are you're going to find out that it isn't necessarily true. They're probably sharing, like, you know, Maggie from BS Free Business. She is always sharing how in many testimonials, you're only seeing the top 1% of success stories versus the full range or breadth of the actual results that people get for their clients or, you know, whatever. So take that as just like a word of caution, but truly like explore it and find what feels good.
That's your consumer.
Yeah.
That's your like consumer protection background.
It is.
Right
it always
there.
Comes back. Yeah. Yeah. It always comes
yeah,
back.
Right.
The thing I hear with what you're describing, too, is like, number one, humanizing our businesses is the difference between us selling a mug and Target selling a mug.
Mm-hmm.
Like, number one. And number two, what's really interesting to me is that a lot of the things people don't want to do and complain about are the things that make trying to sell the thing you've made when it's done feel sleazy because mm-hmm. you've skipped the steps
yes.
of connection.
Yes.
I talked about this a little bit, I think, on an episode from last year when I was talking about email marketing. And people are so worried that they're going to spam the people who sign up for their email that the only emails they ever send are sales emails.
Yeah.
Like they only send a message when they're like, OK, now I have something for you to buy. And I'm like, what feels spammier when you're only hearing from someone because they're like, would you like to give me your credit card information now? Or if you hear from someone not every single day, but maybe once every couple of weeks to be like, hey, human, you exist. I exist. I drink more tea than coffee. What about you? And then a few weeks later, by the way, we have mugs to buy for your tea. You know, like that's so much nicer to me than like buy this mug. It's ready. Buy this mug. And then silence.
Yeah. I mean, I talk a lot in my work about what I call the social selling staircase, which is essentially the foundation of what you need to build to climb to the sale without feeling like you're selling your soul, right? Like so many people, and I think especially people who are in artistic kind of industries, are usually not in them because they saw a big dollar sign at the end of the tunnel, right? They are doing it because it's something that is deep in their soul, that they feel in their heart, that they're so connected to, that was somehow transformative for them, that is meaningful, all of these great things. But ultimately, we all want to get to that sale. And if we skip this, you know, little process, which is the foundation, the very first step is relationship building. The second step is building trust. The third step is building authority. So being the person that people, authority not in like power coercion, authority is being the person somebody thinks of when they think, I want to buy that. I'm ready for that. I just got paid. I want to spend money. That's what authority is being the person that comes top of mind to those people. all of that is built on your content strategy, creating content that's valuable, that improves the quality of life for your audience, that helps them understand who you are, what you do, why you do it, and what makes your pots special, right? What makes you and the product you have special? And that is the foundational work that so many people skip. They think that they can just post the content and say, links in my bio, and it's done. And quite frankly, when you start getting that negative feedback loop of, oh, well, I posted the stuff and I'm still not selling. I, you know, posted every day for the last month and I didn't increase my sales. They're still the same. That's when you start getting demoralized. That's when you start hitting burnout. But if you're not doing those other steps, it's not going to come as easily. It's going to be more, it's going to be prolonged.
100%, because I experienced that. I have this, you know, interesting perspective now of like where I tapped out, like where I plateaued, where I was getting stuck all the time when I was, all I was doing was trying to promote my photography services and events and weddings. And now seeing the like growth and excitement and everything of what the Maker's Playbook has done in the last 3 years is so much different than what I was doing with wedding photography. And if I think about the differences in approaches, number one, I found you in the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. But number two is like that connection and that humanity is there that wasn't necessarily there in the same way, which is ironic to say, considering like that was the most emotional. Like, what would be more human than documenting these huge life moments? But right. I digress. That was just me rambling. We should maybe just cut that later. I want to get to some of these quick hits, rapid fire, hot seat, whatever phrase we're using before we run out of your time. Mini chat. I love that Jenna asked this question because I hadn't even thought of it and I love it. If people don't know what I'm talking about, mini chat is like the thing that when you see somebody post that says, comment mug below and I'll DM you my email sign up list or whatever. It's the system that automates all of that. We're noticing that people are seeing that a lot more these days and potentially getting annoyed by it. So is there a better way to utilize an application like that that's not repeatedly saying, comment this word below and you'll get it? Or is that just the way it works? And we
that's just the way it works. Yeah. And honestly, I think my question is like, who is getting annoyed? Is it the person asking the question? Because there is a lack of understanding of how the product works in the question itself. So, you know, if you don't know how something like this works, then yeah, maybe it does feel a little bit annoying, right? But when you understand it needs a trigger, the keyword is the trigger for the automation. The automation fires, it sends the link. Then it's like, oh, okay, well, that's just what's going on. I just scroll past them. Like, it's just not really a big deal for me. I also think of those as being primarily sales and conversion posts. So I don't agree with using ManyChat on every single post you share. There should be some where you are having different calls to action, right? Like, maybe it's not go to the link in my bio anymore, because ManyChat does convert higher than asking people to take 3 or 4 taps to get from your post to your profile, to your link tree, to the actual product they want to, you know, and that's a lot of work for a person on social media, given, you know, the attention spans of today. So if this is a shortcut that helps people get sales because it hand delivers a link directly to a product or directly to an opt-in for a newsletter, why am I annoyed by that as a business owner is the better question. And maybe follow-up question, why am I not using it? Because the amount of conversions that I've seen come from it, from my own clients, is we're talking people who were getting maybe 5 newsletter signups a day for an account roughly in the high tens, almost into the 100,000 range, to getting 1,500 signups from a single post. The difference is...
Excuse me, why I go sign up for ManyChat. You can just finish this episode by yourself.
Yeah, right. The difference is astronomical, truly. And you need to know how to use it well, and you need to not abuse it. But the other part of it, what has started happening, is that there are so many people who don't understand that it's an automation that they think it's a strategy. So what they're doing is they're not using it. They're not even signed up on ManyChat. They're just saying, comment this word below. And they think that that's improving their engagement. But number one, that's actually considered like engagement baiting, according to Instagram. The only reason why it works with ManyChat is because ManyChat is authorized by Instagram. Number two, it's not actually achieving a means to an end, because when somebody else taps into the comments to see what are other people saying that this has gotten so many comments, they're just going to see the word, and they're going to opt out and they're going to leave, instead of what usually happens when a post gets a ton of organic comments, which is people want to read the comments because usually they're funny or people are saying really interesting or thoughtful things. And so you lose people and you actually lower your video watch rate or your kind of user retention rate on any post, because people are just going to exit out and maybe even exit the app. So, you know, I think paying attention to the call to action, is it just saying comment this word below, or is it saying comment this word below and I'll DM you a link? That differentiates between who is using it to automate and who's using it just for engagement.
And one thing I just wanted to point out that you said at the beginning of that is that that is a conversion focused post. As in, like, that is
selling.
That's the post that you are going to, exactly. Like, you are not selling in every single post you create. And I think this is something we're probably going to dig way deeper in your masterclass that we're going to do inside the community, because we just don't have the time for it on the podcast. Yeah. And it's way more complicated and way more stuff. But, like, every post you write is not going to be, the call to action is not going to be selling, right? To kind of clarify that, hopefully, for people. Speaking of posting and how much you're posting schedule, Jamie is asking, like, what's the current situation here? What's the current recommendation, if there is one? I've got a feeling I know your answer, and it starts with a D and ends with appends. But if there was one, current recommended posting schedule, and also, are hashtags still important? Like, essentially all the bells and whistles of Instagram when it comes to hashtags, when it comes to polls and questions. What should people actually be utilizing that's going to make a difference?
From Instagram has said this from the beginning, which is, if you are trying to reach the maximum audience possible, you should be using every surface on Instagram. So Instagram refers to all of the different types of posts or places you could create content as being surfaces. Reels are a surface. Stories are a surface. Carousels, feed posts are a surface. Then there's the features. So things like poll stickers that go into either your story or the polls that go into the posts themselves. There's the music, there's, you know, GIFs, there's all kinds of other things that we can utilize that are features, little kind of add-ons, especially when you're new. But I think almost anyone should be applying a variety of types of content, carousels, photos, single image things, quotes, whatever it makes sense with your industry. So, like, not every industry, I'm not saying like a potter needs to create like inspirational quotes all the time. Maybe it's like one a month, or maybe it's never, but, you know, just using a wide variety of the different surfaces that are available, single image post plus carousels of whatever. Maybe it's like multiple products, or you're showing like the progression of a product or the degression of a product. So there's that. In terms of frequency itself, I think for any business who's looking to grow and to have an impact on social in terms of their bottom line, their revenue, I usually recommend a minimum of 3 times per week. That's just in your feed. So that's reels, carousels, photos, etc. Your story, I think most people should be showing up at least 4 to 6 times. Again, minimum 4, maximum 6. You can always take a day or two off. It's not a big deal. Often I find that when I take 24 hours off, the first time I post, when I come back in my Instagram story, I do have a bit of a peak in terms of my total reach. That also depends on what I post and what I post after that. So there's a whole lot of other factors that go into it. I do remember, at least maybe it was a couple of years ago now, Adam Mosseri, who's the head of Instagram, he mentioned something about, if you're not getting a lot of reach on your story, to take 24 hours off and then post something. Sometimes it just gives people a little break, you know, and they'll want to come back and see what you've got going on. So in terms of frequency, that, remind me what else was in the question, because there was a few different things that you mentioned.
She was just mentioning kind of all of the tools, like what are, there's certain tools in Instagram that we should be utilizing to increase reach.
Hashtag was the third. I couldn't remember what the third one was. So Instagram hashtags. The thing to keep in mind with hashtags is they are a categorization tool, not a tool of distribution. So this is something that I have talked about and will continue to talk about probably in perpetuity because not enough people know about it. But hashtags are not intended to get you more reach. Sometimes when your content is good and your hashtags are specific and aligned with what you've actually shared and people are looking for that thing, they will also be boosted into hashtags that people follow, hashtags where people are searching, keyword search results, but only in keyword search results. So that's when you go into the explore page and you just search a word without adding the hashtag beforehand or without tapping over to the tab that says tags. Your content won't show up as a keyword search if you don't put your hashtags in your caption. If you put them in the first comment, they won't show up there. It won't be categorized properly if you don't put them in your caption, excuse me, and you put them in the first comment. So make sure when you're adding hashtags, the things to remember is you don't need as many, but if you can get more and have them be very specific and not super generic, like say, for example, something in this industry would just be like hashtag ceramics, way too general. Hashtag ceramic mug, hashtag ceramicist, hashtag woman owned ceramics, hashtag whatever, right? The more specific you kind of create a string of keywords, the more specific you can get, the better those hashtags are going to perform. And the more easily Instagram will categorize your content and show it to the right people. That's really what I want you to think about, is it's less about, okay, if I use all of these hashtags, I'm going to get so much more reach. No, it's about if I use these hashtags and the content is good, then when Instagram shows it to people, it's going to show it to the right people. And if those people react positively to it, then it's going to show it to more of the right people. And that's how people go viral, right? So keeping those in mind, I had one of those, like, I hate saying this, but I have one of those like calls with Meta last week. They'll offer it to anyone. Full transparency, I've been so deep in my business that I haven't posted on my own account in like 9 weeks, right? Sometimes when you are running your own business and things are...
Which I'm not going to lie.
People love, honestly.
I just love to see it. It gives me so much calm to see you crushing at your job and not having to always constantly be producing
I don't have to always constantly be producing content. It's and you know, other people may go through those phases. It's less common when you're constantly kind of creating a product and like launching a product. But if you have a newsletter or a blog, or you're selling in person and your stuff gets bought out without you posting on social, unless you want to become a celebrity potter or you want to change your production process so that you could produce more, it doesn't make sense for you to be on social and expand in that way. I had somebody ask at that same conference last week, how do I stay small on social? I said, well, you can't really guarantee it in the same way I can't guarantee you're going to go viral. Sometimes things get out of control and small businesses can suffer as a result of that, right? So yeah, the Meta call I had just last week, the woman who I spoke to reiterated all of this. Like they don't share like groundbreaking, like insider info. It's like stuff you can find on the Instagram blog or on the creator's page. One of the things that she said to me explicitly about hashtags was making sure that they're specific, that you use longer kind of chains of keywords, and using somewhere between 3 and 8. Now, I don't sign on to the 3 to 8 rule, but I do only because usually when people try to go above and beyond 3 to 8, they start adding in all of these hashtags that have nothing to do with their business. They're too generic. They're not aligned enough. It doesn't make enough sense. So if you can come up with 8 strong hashtags that apply to your work, and then add in these little ones with it, right? So say, for example, you are creating a mug with like a print like this on it, right? There's some nice crocodiles with a green background, right? I would maybe circumstantially that just that one piece of content be doing hashtag crocodile mug, hashtag croc print, hashtag animal print, hashtag, you know, animal print mug, even better. Animal print is probably too generic. But like getting really specific with the way that we use the hashtags and making them specific to that piece of content. So some creators, if they're always creating the same thing, same glaze, same patterns, same, you can use the same hashtags. But if you are someone who is creating a variety of different aesthetics or you're posting about a variety of different topics, then your hashtags should reflect that.
My brain immediately just went to like croc, not crocs. Like, are we, I feel like funny hashtags are just there for humor and not for actual strategy. But yeah. I just want somebody to use croc, not crocs. There we go. That's my story.
Yeah.
Last, we have pushed on your time. So I want you to just give me your like one hit favorites on this and not what I know will be the default, which is like robust strategic response.
Okay.
So your favorites, just in full respect of your time. Jessica's question was biggest time saver and biggest time waster when making Instagram content.
Okay. Biggest time saver is scheduling tools that auto post and templates, creating your own templates in advance that you can just drag and drop, plug and play. Time savers. Time wasters, scrolling the Reels tab for content ideas. Time wasters, spending way too much time too often on hashtags. Time wasters, comparing yourself to other people in your industry. Maybe the biggest one. Get out of there. Mute them.
I was going to say that's the mic drop and the episode right there. Boom, done. I love it. There was so much more that we could keep going in that should surprise no one because it's a huge platform and strategy. When you want to do something properly, it's not a let me give you this quick answer and that will solve all your problems. Mm-hmm. Like Spidey senses everyone. There was no way we were going to solve all the Instagram questions in an hour. Which is why we have a follow-up masterclass with you, my dear, in the community where we're just going to go even deeper than we already went, which might blow some people's minds.
No, it'll be good.
Until that moment, if people want to connect with you online, if they want to see more of these hot tips that you've got coming at them to keep us all sane and actually like see improvement, see traction, see momentum without losing our minds. It's a beautiful thing. Where can they come find you?
They can come find me on basically every platform. I don't really post on X anymore because it is a hellscape. But that Allie Mason, thatalliemason. You can find me pretty much everywhere. You can also go to somethinggreatersocial.com or thatalliemason.com to find out ways to work with me. And honestly, just stay for the lulls. Come for the strategy, stay for the lulls.
That's my intro to if you don't follow me yet,
that's what you're going to get.
Francesco's most recent favorite phrase, like American slang, is that tracks.
That tracks.
Like,
yeah,
yes.
Tracks, yeah.
That tracks.
Mm-hmm.
Also, since people can't see us and this is audio only, for anyone who is fighting the good fight with trying to come to peace with your curls, I feel like following Allie online is just generally a good, like I've gotten really far in the past year because of our relationship.
Yeah. Curl liberation.
I love it.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I love it so much. Was there something we didn't talk about that you want to make sure someone hears come out of your mouth before this interview is over?
Yeah, I think I would like to address some of like the hack content that people see because I get that question so often. One thing that I would love for people to keep in mind is usually when you see a video saying that you need to do X, Y, or Z in order to get reach, right? So I always use the analogy of, you know, for those, this is going to date me and you, but for those of us who were conscious and aware in the 90s, I remember like, you know, there was like 15 minute abs and then there was 10 minute abs and then there was 9 minute abs and then there was 8 minute abs and it went all the way down. There was like 4 minute abs. And I was like, what? I feel like that is what has happened with Reels, where every so often we get a different length of time that people are saying is like the number to hit. No, it needs to be 7 seconds with this much text on it. No, it needs to be 5 seconds. No, it needs to be 9 seconds. No, it needs to be 15 seconds. Now it's 30 seconds. Instagram is pushing this. TikTok is pushing that. Consider the source. Look at what they're selling. If there's somebody who is essentially trying to make money off of a course or, you know, something else like that, that it's like, where are they getting this information from? If they can't show you with receipts what drove them to be able to make this inference, if they have an N of one, right, which is like talking about stats. If I have one data point, as an example of why something works, that will not hold up in any sort of research standard, right? I need multiple data points from multiple different accounts. If it's one person just giving data on their own stuff and they're a marketer, forget it. Forget it. I try to never talk about my own personal results because as a marketer whose business is Instagram, of course my content about Instagram is going to perform pretty well on Instagram. Do you know what I mean? When I post, for context, when I post, it will perform well. But instead, look for people who are using examples from people outside of their industry. If they can provide, you know, evidence or receipts from accounts that are not related to marketing, that's a much better holistic kind of picture about how something really works than just my own personal anecdotes from my account as a marketer. So keep that in mind. And as with all things with income claims, a lot of that stuff is absolute nonsense. The FTC is cracking down on a lot of this stuff right now, and there's some class actions coming to light. Probably we're going to hear about a lot of them within the next few years, cracking down on this style of business. So if something seems too good to be true, as the old adage goes, it probably is. Just check in with yourself. Find somebody, it doesn't have to be me. Find somebody like me who at least is not just going to give you a cookie cutter response for absolutely everything, and begin to cultivate your own ability to discern and think for yourself. And that's going to be your best, again, protection. I always go back to consumer protection. It's going to be your best protection as a business owner who consumes business content on social media.
As a person who has spent a fair chunk of change on online education over the last 14 years, I am here to say it is totally okay if you get caught up and sold on something that is promising a quick solution. But hopefully in that moment, before you submit your credit card information, remind yourself that business is hard and it takes time and it takes consistency and commitment, and there's not a silver bullet to, you know, solve your reels to go viral, to double your follower count in 30 days or 10 days or 2 hours, whatever it is.
Exactly.
I love chatting. I could just keep going and going and going, but that's why we planned a follow-up conversation.
Exactly, exactly.
And I hope that you host some version of some live spilling of the tea when all those class actions come out, because that's just going to be great. I'm just like,
yeah.
Ooh,
I feel like that needs to be like a multi-person live with like Maggie and a couple others.
Maggie.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. I'm like, oh, that's going to be fun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for
likewise.
Taking the time. Okay, so we hit on a lot. But one subject I mentioned at the start that I know we probably could have spent an entire episode alone just talking about was burnout. If you're feeling the burnout, I promise you are not alone. We've all been there, Allie included. And these bigger, a bit more vulnerable subjects are exactly why we're having the follow-up conversation with Allie in our IG masterclass inside of the community. If you had an aha moment in this last hour of listening, you are not going to want to miss the masterclass happening on April 25th. 2 very short weeks from the date this podcast originally airs, this episode at least. Now that you've discovered how crazy savvy Allie is, I want to break down the pragmatic and frankly financial side of the masterclass. In other words, I'm just going to be really blunt. Typically, a one-on-one strategy session with Allie is $425 USD. This masterclass is included with the price of our community membership. In other words, with $42 USD, you get a $425 masterclass. Yes. You heard that correctly. It is a little bit crazy. But here's the thing. I know Instagram is a huge subject for so many makers. I also know that the strategies and best practices that Ali shares can apply to other platforms and not just Instagram. And most of all, I know that dark place of comparison and exhaustion and of spinning my wheels feeling like I have to do this thing, but I don't really want to post. So then whatever I do put up there on the internet, it just goes nowhere. And ugh, that feels terrible. And then that adds to the dark place and bleh. But I also know firsthand the relief as I have learned to grow my own account strategically because of Ali over these last couple of years in a way that actually feels good for me. It actually feels sustainable now and manageable and honest and authentic to how I want to show up in the world, either in real life or digitally. And I really want that feeling for all of us. If you don't want to be on Instagram every single day of your life for the rest of your career, you don't have to. And I know that Ali is one of the best people out there to show you how to avoid that while also still being a smart and savvy business owner. So, April 25th, 2024. 13 very short days from the day that this episode airs, and maybe even less time, depending on when you're listening to this episode. The masterclass is happening inside of the community only. So yes, you do have to come join the community. But also yes, with a $42 membership, you'll have Ali's masterclass that would normally cost you $425. So even for people who hate math, that math is pretty easy, right? And by the way, if you're listening to this after April 25th, send me a message. Because yes, also, the masterclass will be recorded for our community members. We absolutely have members from all over the world, and it is impossible to find a single time that works for everyone. I know that Rhiannon might not want to get up at 6 a.m. in Sydney to join. Although now that I say that, knowing Rhiannon, she probably is totally going to be there. Anyway, I'm rambling now. To come join an incredibly wonderful group of fellow makers supporting each other in figuring out how to make a living from the things we make, inside of the community, and gain access to Ali's live IG masterclass on April 25th while you're at it. Because while I did just say there's going to be recording, if you are listening to this over the span of these next 13 days, the benefit of coming in now is that you get your questions answered. The recording is just going to be the recording. Ali's not going to be in there every day. Anyway, I digress. Come visit makersplaybook.com/community. To sign up. I think once you see all of the other perks of membership on that page, this is probably going to be a no-brainer. But of course, if you do have any questions at all, don't hesitate to ask them. You know where to find me, at the Makers Playbook on Instagram, or for good old regular email, hello@makers-playbook.com. But one more time, to come join us for this masterclass in 13 very short days, you're going to want to go to makersplaybook.com/community. This episode was made possible in part thanks to our sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by the Rosenfield Collection of Functional Ceramic Art. The collection exists as an online source for research and inspiration, featuring photos of objects made by over 1,000 artists. The images are high quality and can be used with no permission required, making them a great source for students and teachers. To find out more, visit www.rosenfieldcollection.com. A special thank you to the Archie Bray Foundation for sponsoring this episode of The Maker's Playbook. The Bray Clay Business is your best source for Bray Epoxy, a two-part moldable epoxy intended for post-firing repairs. Working like clay, it's easy to shape, texture, fill gaps, and recreate missing parts. Braypoxy is sold in tan, white, and black base colors with a 9-color kit that will allow you to perfectly disguise your repair. Order anytime online at archiebrayclay.com. Audio post-production of this podcast is made possible by help from Christy Kotzfun, with promotional material assistance from Queenie Maliki. The Maker's Playbook podcast is recorded on the original homelands of the Potawatomi, Ho-Chunk, and Menominee people, where the people of Wisconsin's sovereign Anishinaabe, Ho-Chunk, Menominee, Oneida, and Mohican nations remain present. Until next time, my friends, go get back to making your dreams a reality. Because together, we've got this.
This podcast is a production of the Brickyard Network, an extension of the Archie Bray Foundation for the Ceramic Arts. To find out more about our lineup of ceramic podcasts, visit brickyardnetwork.org.